In the dark night of the soul, it is the deep breath before dawn, the penitence before the cup, the darkness before first light. From deep inside the castle, at the heart of the resistance, the Waterman Files. As nightfall does not come at once, neither does oppression. In both instances, there's a twilight where everything remains seemingly unchanged. And it is in such twilight that we must be aware of change in the air, however slight, lest we become unwitting victims of the darkness.
Welcome to the Waterman Files. Today is July 29th, 2011. And this is Dr. John Waterman, and I'm coming to you, of course, from deep inside the castle, and it's a good late night in the Netherlands. And good evening and good morning wherever you might be. I'm glad you can join me. If you're listening for the first time, I want to welcome you. I want to welcome all the regular listeners and those in the chat room, and our guest is in there now, I believe. And if you're listening live right now, I encourage you to go to argusoog.org, argusoog.org, click on the chat tab, and select one of the red buttons that says here, one of the red, it'll be in red, and just go into the chat room. Don't need to sign up or anything. So if you're listening live, join us. This broadcast is live, 10 p.m. Holland time and 4 p.m. East Coast time, and folks, you're deep inside the resistance. And you know what? It's really important that you know you are not alone. Right? You're not alone. Well, today, I have a guest, first part of the broadcast. Later on, we're going to be talking about prophetic information and maybe with the WebBot correlations with those two kind of overlapping. Late in the show, we'll have Eli James and, of course, Terrell's Welcome, which is my guest first here, to stay with us through this whole thing. Terrell, tell us a little bit about yourself, and he's my guest today, and he's going to give us some information there has been a lot of information kicked around Planet X, Nibiru, LNN, whatever you want to call it, but we're talking, you know, about some pretty serious stuff here, so you might have seen some of Terrell's stuff. So, Terrell, tell us a little bit about what's up.
Briefly, about myself, I very much enjoy writing Bible commentary. I write Bible commentary for Christians, for Messianic Jews, for people around the world. I've been doing that for quite some time. And I began investigating 9/11 on the 5th anniversary. I was not very much interested until that point. And then I spent thousands and thousands of hours investigating 9/11. That link that I gave you in your chat room, if you go down the board, you'll see there. I have a timeline there, the 100 most important events for 9/11. I spent a lot of time. I do know the truth about 9/11, and it's shocking.
Okay. Looks like we've lost Terrell. We'll continue here, folks. I'm going to get you some information today, and if you'll go to the Waterman files, you'll see a link to a whole list of information. Till he gets back here, you can go there to the Waterman files, and on the watermanfiles.com, you'll see a tab that I put in there, and the tab is about Dwarf Star and Elenin, or ELE Dwarf Star. And this is a list of information. There he is. Terrell, you're back, aren't you?
Yes, I was talking away. I didn't know what happened.
Well, you've spent thousands of hours, and you got cut off right as you said.
Okay. So, yeah,
I know what happened.
Investigating 9/11, I found the truth. I tried telling people, and generally people don't believe me. My Christian work, people don't believe me. My Elenin work, people don't believe me. It's like I'm in a nightmare or something. But the science says, you know, I've got a scientific view, which is posted in the links there. I've got my religion view, and they are different. Well, I'm trying to share with you today the scientific view. I've done a lot of research on this, and the evidence says that we have a dwarf star that's approaching. It crossed Mars orbit on June the 27th. It's crossing Earth orbit on August the 3rd. It's crossing Venus orbit on August the 18th. It's going to reach Mercury orbit around September the 1st and reach perigee on September 11th, exactly 10 years after the 9/11 attacks. And then we're going to have an alignment on 9/26 that's going to cause a pole shift, according to the timeline. Of course, we hope these things are wrong, but unfortunately, this is what the evidence says. If we go back in time to March 11th, 2011 this year, Earth axis shifted 4 inches. Aquifers around the world shifted. We had the 9.0 quake over in Japan. A year ago, on February 27th, 2010, Earth axis shifted 3 inches, 8.8 Chile quake. Aquifers around the world shifted. The only common denominator that I can find is alignments with this Elenin comet. They're calling it a comet. And when the Earth swung around in orbit and passed directly between the two stars, then we passed through a gravity trough that connects the two gravity wells together, and that holds the magnetic portals that connect these two stars together, and that's what caused these events. Now, that's my thesis that everything hinges on, and if that thesis is wrong, then everything I'm telling you is wrong. Unfortunately, every time we get a new warning from NASA, like about the photon cloud that we're supposedly orbiting through, when we get the new warnings about the almost 50 volcanoes going off simultaneously, that hasn't happened in our lifetimes. It's happening right now with the earthquakes and the magnetosphere trying to collapse, the magnetic pole migration that we have. Everything points to the approach of a dwarf star. I mean, that answers everything. There's no other single answer for everything that's happening. And what I've been doing myself in Envy, what we've been doing since February is trying to warn people about this thing that's coming in, and under attack from elements working inside of our government, and the same ones that are telling us the lies about 9/11. That's basically where we're sitting at right now.
Well, that's not surprising that it's the same group, because we're fighting the same people. We're fighting them about our economy. We're fighting them about our health, and I mean, you name it, they're causing the trouble. So, tell us a little bit about You just mentioned a lot of things that maybe people aren't familiar with, and you said something about a gravity well. We may not know what that would imply and so forth. Can you kind of explain some of the thoughts you've got about the process you came to understand how threatening it is? As you began to research this, you probably had some kind of idea here about what was the threat. And so are we talking gravity? Are we talking magnetism? What is it we're talking about?
We're talking about all the above. To understand a gravity well, then take your king-size bed and put a bowling ball out in the middle of it, and you have a large U-shaped gravity well.
Okay.
This star that's coming in, if it turns out to be a dwarf star, then it's very, very dense. A dwarf star of this kind that has half the mass of the sun is only 50% larger than the Earth. If this thing turns out to be a neutron star, a neutron star only 10 to 12 kilometers across is twice the mass of our sun. It doesn't look like this is a neutron star to me, because from observations from Astro Patriot and from Dr. Byron Glenn, that was a member of our group, they were able to visualize it under optimum conditions. Dr. Glenn was able to visualize it on May the 29th, the 30th, and the 31st because of the conditions that were optimum. From all the observations that I have from the astronomers around the world that I've worked with, it has seven orbitals. It has a red one, it has multiple white ones and blue ones. The 7 o'clock orbital is the one that NASA is tracking as their Ellen and Comet. The 3 o'clock orbital is red. And from observations, it appears this thing, when it has an elliptical orbit, it orbits outside the photon cloud, outside the event horizon of the gravity well. And when it does so, then it rides along the ridge of what appears to be a V-shaped gravity well. So it goes up the side and then crawls along and then falls back inside. Now, that tells me that this thing has a V-shaped gravity well. That's something in between the U-shaped sun gravity well, like our sun, and the deep gravity well associated with the black hole. So that goes down.
A black hole which is sucking everything into it, with a very powerful pull, so powerful that even light can't come out of it. So we're talking about a lot of strong pulling, I guess you could say sucking power. It's stronger than what our sun would show as a gravity well, but not as strong as a black hole. So we're in between those, is what you're saying.
Right, but if you look at models showing a black hole, what you notice is things inside of that well are affected greatly, but things on the outside are not. And that's the problem with this V-shaped well. Number one, you can't see it because the temperature is almost absolute zero. It's just above absolute zero. That's created by the release of the photons. The deep V gravity well is created by the small size and the great mass. And that creates the perfect situation for the gravitational lensing effect. Okay, the gravitational lensing effect allows you to see the stars in the distance that fills in the blank. So whenever you look directly at this thing, you just cannot see it. The conditions must be perfect in order for you to see it. You need light shining from a dominant star on the backside of the well, and the moon cannot be out. If you have light shining from this side of the well, then it makes this thing turn completely invisible.
Now, you're saying we've got a question in the chat room, why there isn't a picture of this thing that's clear. I think you just explained it. Now, you're saying we can't get a picture of it because it's absolute zero. People are going to probably have a problem with that because they say, well, I thought a sun was hot. So can you go over that a little bit more?
Sure. The dwarf star begins as a white dwarf, transitions into a brown dwarf, and then to a black dwarf. What happens is, first let's look at the sun. It began as a dust cloud. The dust cloud collapsed upon itself to create the disk, and that created the rotation. Now, whenever the ignition took place because there was sufficient mass, that stopped the implosion process. Okay, well, with a dwarf, there's insufficient mass to create for the implosion. The implosion process takes place, but there's insufficient mass for the ignition. What happens is that the cloud continues to collapse. What happens is that you have a separation of the molecular parts, the components. The photons and the neutrons wind up on the outside. The protons, neutrons wind up on the outside. The photons, electrons, and the subatomic matter winds up on the inside. So this thing billions of years ago was a white dwarf, and it shed its outer skin over the billions of years. So the large molecular parts, the protons and the neutrons, they have already been shed. Now we're down to the core of this object. That's why it transitions into a black dwarf from a brown. So because the inner core has the highest density. So we're reaching the now with the evolution of this dwarf. I believe that it's between a brown dwarf and a black dwarf. That's where it becomes completely invisible, where it could be right in front of you, and because of the absolute zero temp, because of almost absolute zero, it's just above, and because of the gravitational lensing effect, that it's right in front of you and you just can't see it. The time that we will be able to visualize this thing, I predict, is going to be between September 1st, around 1st of September, whenever it reaches Mercury orbit, and that two-week period following. And it depends on the mass, which I don't know exactly. So it's like melting an ice cube. If it's a large ice cube, it takes longer to melt. And so later in the timeline, this thing becomes visible. That means that higher mass that it has. The higher mass that it has means the greater gravitational effect that it's going to have. Now, the magnetic effect began from this dwarf star in 2004. What happens is this star does not have its own core to be able to create its own magnetism. What it does have is magnetic portals that are connected to our sun. Okay? So if you go through the link there, you're going to find the NASA link, the information about magnetic portals. Now, from the sun and the earth, there are extends within between these two bodies magnetic portals. At perigee position, when the earth is nearest the sun, that's when the most of those conduits inside those portals are active.
Now, when will that be?
I'm leading up to an explanation. I'm explaining the anatomy of the solar system. Okay, so you've got wells. The earth is sitting inside of a well. The sun is sitting inside of a deep U-shaped well. Where they intersect is where the gravity trough. Inside that gravity trough is where you have the magnetic portals. Okay, a magnetic portal is like the size of the earth. Inside that portal, you have conduits. You have conduits that are active and inactive. Okay, now that's the anatomy of between the sun and the earth. So we receive our magnetism, the earth does, from the sun through these magnetic portals. Well, Ellie, that's what I call this dwarf star. Ellie also has connections to the sun the same exact way. It sits inside of a deep V-shaped gravity well.
Oh, okay, and they'd be bigger. They'd be stronger in a whole bit.
Way stronger. Okay, so what happens is where those two gravity wells intersect, that's where the trough is. Okay, now there's magnetic portals that's connecting this star that's coming in to our sun. So it siphons off magnetism from the sun. Now these portals that extend between the earth and the sun, they connect and disconnect on 8-minute cycles because of the rotation.
Oh, really?
Yes, they do.
Oh, that's the 8 minutes the sunlight takes to get to the planet too, then.
Well, the magnetic portals connect and disconnect, and as you're reaching perigee position, perigee is nearest the sun, apogee is the farthest from the sun. So as the earth is orbiting nearer the sun, more and more of those conduits become active, fewer of them become active as you get further away. Well, the same process is true for this inbound star. This inbound star is currently 1.5 AU, astronomical units, from the sun. And its magnetic portals are connecting and disconnecting the same way. But as it gets
An AU, before you go too far.
Okay.
What AU?
Currently 1.5 AU, so 93 million miles. So it's about 140 million miles away right now and closing.
Now, 1 AU, is that the distance from the Earth to the sun?
That's right, about 93 million miles.
So it's about it's just a little bit further away than our own sun, is what you're saying.
Currently, yes.
Okay.
When the March 11th alignment happened with the Japan quake, then Ellie was 2.1 AU away. Then on April the 25th, we crossed orbit right in front of the thing where it's going to come through around the sun. We were at 1.8 AU away, and we matched orbit. So we're like two sailboats sailing the same direction.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Okay. That distance was stretched out to 1.836 AU by May the 28th when we reached outside orbit position. that is the time that this thing was most easily visible, because we not only matched orbit at the same speed, so there was not a focus problem. Mm-hmm. We also reached outside orbit position, the furthest outside. That's whenever this thing appears to be completely motionless in the sky. And that's whenever our group member, Dr. Byron Glenn, was able to visualize the right side of the gravity well event horizon, and to see the photon vortices, and to identify everything that we had heard from Astro Patriot before. Okay, so this thing, as it gets closer and closer, your original question has to do with the magnetic or the gravitational effect. The magnetic portals from the dwarf star were connected to our Earth in 2004. That's the time that the magnetic poles of our Earth began migrating. Okay, so you've heard that airports are adjusting their runways because of the North Pole that's moving. And right. scientists are wanting to say that we're going through a pole shift, but we are not going through a pole shift. What's happening is the star's coming in. We're getting a double dose of magnetism, because the magnetic portals that it has connected to the sun, as it gets nearer the sun, there more of those conduits are becoming active. So it's siphoning magnetism off the sun. In turn, this thing is getting nearer and nearer to the Earth. So those magnetic portals are becoming shorter and shorter as it gets closer in proximity, and more of those are becoming active. So what's happening is we're getting a double dose of magnetism from two stars. The magnetite inside the Earth, the magnetite formations are receiving that magnetism and transferring the heat to the core. That's the reason that you have the magma displacement. That's the reason that you have the calderas bulging. That's the reason you have almost 50 volcanoes going off at the same time.
It seems like to me that would also be the reason why we're having global warming, not because we got too many cows farting, you know, methane.
Right. So, that's all a cover story.
Right. Now, let me ask you, you know what's interesting, Terrell, is this week it's been so hot. I'm down here in the Ozarks. It's been so hot that our groundwater, and usually groundwater out of the Ozark Hills, is very cool. It's warm. It's not even, I mean, the earth, the water coming out of the out of it now, out of the ground, is literally warm. You could take a tepid shower from the temperature. You don't even have to turn on your hot water. That's kind of bizarre. Is that a result of the ground?
Earth's core is heating up. Earth is actually expanding. Okay. It's becoming larger, because magma that's hot takes up more space. See, it's becoming lighter and more fluffy. And what you have, I believe, now this is my speculation, I don't have the science to back it up, what I believe is that you have ancient lava tubes that are running from the Yellowstone caldera. They reach out to the underground or the underwater volcanoes that are off the coast, but they also reach over into the Midwest. And what you have is a series of plugs. So the last time that those lava tubes were used, whenever the lava retreated, then you had accumulation of lava in spots that block the tube. Those are plugs. Now, magma becomes lighter and lighter, it's like taking an aspirin. It makes your blood become lighter and lighter and easier to push. Now, this magma that's heating up is finding ways into the nooks and crannies. It's also finding its way through the ancient lava tubes until it reaches a plug. Then whenever the caldera rises and rises, the pressure increases until that plug breaks. And that's that's the seismicity. That's the magma harmonics that Dutch sense, if you follow his YouTube videos. That's what he's recording. That's what's happening. And the Midwest eventually is going to receive that hot magma, and it's going to lubricate the joints inside the New Madrid fault system. And until that pressure is released, it's going to be lubricated until everything starts to slide. All that water that's behind those dams are going to break from the Missouri Basin. They're just full of water. And all that water that's in the upper Midwest is going to aid in the liquefaction of the entire Midwest. The entire Mississippi River Valley is going to be liquefied. And also, what added to this story is the fact that the Gulf oil crisis, that was a cover for the destruction of the salt dome under the Gulf. And that salt dome is deteriorating and has deteriorated away. So what you have over what was the salt dome is very similar to a bird's nest turned upside down. We have layer upon layer upon layer. That support system is holding until this dwarf star gets here and starts shaking everything. Then that collapses. Liquefaction of the Midwest and the destruction of the salt dome, and that collapse is what's going to cause the entire Midwest to slide into the Gulf of Mexico. Then the water from the Gulf is going to rush up and displace the land all the way to the Great Lakes. And you're going to have a Mississippi Gulf.
Well, are you still there? Did we lose you? Okay, good. You know, here in the Ozarks, a lot of people have been saying go there. Some have been saying not to go there because it's going to rupture and all these dams are going to break. Well, you know, it's so hilly here, you could just watch the water of a dam break and be fine because you could be on the hill. As long as you're not below the dam, you're fine. Now, another thing, too, that I want to make clear to a lot of people that aren't in this area is that there are two kinds of rock formations in this area. One is limestone and one is granite, folks. Now, on the southeast of the Ozarks, down toward Cape Girardeau and into the middle of Arkansas, where all these earthquakes are occurring, first of all, those are not the Ozark Hills. Although just a little to the north is limestone, but starting at about just a little bit north of the middle of Arkansas at a diagonal, which would put you, let's say you ran a line from northwest Arkansas to St. Louis on a diagonal. Just a little bit south of that diagonal, starting in the hills of the Ozarks, is a granite formation. And it seems like, folks, the limestone's shaking because the granite people, the people that are living on that granite, they don't feel a thing, Terrell. I mean, there's been earthquakes over there they felt that didn't even make it into a lot of the Ozark area because they're in the granite part. Now, I will say this, too. Walmart headquarters, corporate, installed in northwest Arkansas Ozarks, an underground facility for housing all of their data and information structures, that is earthquake and, you know, ELE proof, so to speak. And it's setting in this granite structure. And a lot of people are sitting there. I think that we need to talk a little bit more general, though, and I just wanted to say that, Terrell, because a lot of people are concerned about, you know, gosh, you're just going to flood and get all kinds of water and be in trouble in caves in the Ozarks and so forth. And I think it just depends on which one you're in, because, you know, it's going to be like you might be in the granite part and you'll be on the shore of the lake, so to speak. Because I agree with you. I think we're right at the brink of all that over on the Mississippi, which is the east side of Arkansas and Missouri, is going to rip loose. What do you think the time frame is? So tell us what you see with the information you've got. When, if it did cause the problem, what are we looking at? And a lot of people are really interested in a schedule. So, but go ahead and take off wherever you feel comfortable here. I don't want to take you out of your talk.
Okay.
There, so.
Well, I agree with you that the Ozarks is the best place to be, by far, in the United States. The west side of Missouri and Arkansas, that's the place to be. The east side of Missouri is not the place to be. But we are 11, 12, 1,300 feet above sea level. And like you said, it's very hilly. A place like I believe the name was Wonderland in upper Arkansas, that's granite. I mean, you're talking caverns that are cut out of granite. You know, there's a contingent. There's a lot of people that's already there. There's people that broke off from our original group that are already there. They're trying to tell people not to go to the Ozarks because they feel like that we're a threat to them. Yeah. And since they're already there, they don't want anybody else to go there. But I am telling you, I've investigated this from up to the top to the bottom, back and forth. The Ozarks is by far the best, safest place to be because of the water, because of the resources, natural resources, because it's sparsely populated. The plate that's underneath is very stable. There are two power plants that do affect us, but we have billionaires that have built billion-dollar installations there, and we know they have measures in place to deal with that. I cannot say the same about the East Coast or the West Coast. The East Coast, whenever the New Madrid breaks loose and you have a fault system running up the eastern seaboard that is going to unlock, and when it does, it's going to be in shaking all those nuclear power plants. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to come out of your cavern sometime. And it's not going to work. In the East Coast, you need to get west of the Mississippi, and you need to get south. The reason is because on the West Coast, you have a similar problem with the caldera that's out there. Whenever it ruptures and breaks, then which way is the pyroclastic flow going to go? You just don't know. And the glassy content of that caldera killed animals on the other side of the planet the last time it went off. You do not want to be downwind. You don't want to be downwind of that thing. Now, this particular event, I believe, will result in the the Pacific Ocean is going to invade. This thing's going to rise so high, and then break, and then spew lightweight magma everywhere and collapse, and then the Pacific Ocean is going to invade, and it's going to put out the fire. But still, you don't want to be in the west, and you don't want to be in the east of the United States. You want to be in the central part on the stable plate, and you want to be south. And that all the directions point to the Ozarks. Now, as far as the timeline, that's in the link that's in your forum that I posted there. If you just go down to the event timeline, you'll see that. What we're looking at are three primary threats associated with this Elenin dwarf star that's coming in. The first threat is the solar threat. The solar threat, the maximum, is September 11th at perigee. The day of perigee is very important. That's the day that Ellie passes from the southern hemisphere of our solar system to the northern hemisphere, so it's equatorial. That means it's right on the equator of the sun. And the biggest problem is that even comets and asteroids, whenever they get near the sun, it causes solar flares. Sometimes they come out and actually strike the object, because what causes the flare is the gravitational relationship between the two bodies. Now, just imagine if a comet, a small body that's made out of ice, can pull out a flare. Imagine what a star does. So this thing is getting nearer and nearer to the equator of the sun, and it's also, it's going to reach Mercury orbit. Mercury orbit. Imagine a star at Mercury orbit with all that mass. Around September the 1st. So the solar threat extends 2 weeks on either side of perigee. So at the end of August, in the last days of August, we could be looking at solar flares that cause the chronomass ejections, a series, one after another, that include electromagnetic pulses that disable your vehicles and all your electronics.
That's horrible. Because that would stop even gas pumps from working. You couldn't even get the gas out of them anymore.
Absolutely.
We're talking about everything coming to a screeching halt. Now, the other day, Ed Dames talked again in this month about, you know, this kill shot. He says, I don't want you to interpret that as one event. He says it's a series of events. It's a series of solar flares, not one. And he says you can call it the kill shot if you want, but they're right behind each other, and it's a series. And that's what you just said, was a series. And I'm looking at the timeline, and it's yellow about mid-August. Is that right? And it turns red late August?
That's right. But you have to realize that I'm doing threat assessment for lots of people around the world, and their safety winds are extended backwards in time to give you extra time. We expect the power grid to go down in the month of September. The month of September is going to be where we get the kill shot. However, whenever Ellie is getting this dwarf star, I'm calling Ellie, whenever she gets closer and closer to the sun, we have a chance that the magnetic portals, you see, since she's in the southern hemisphere, are connecting and disconnecting and reconnecting in the southern hemisphere of the sun. Okay? Now, there's a chance that she can reach up right onto the equator and pull out a flare during the month of August. It's possible that that can happen. So we could get the kill shot early. That's the reason that the safety windows are backed up into August, to get people to their bug-out caverns early. But, I mean, that's for safety window for threat assessment. I would rather get you to a bug-out location early, and you be safe, and you be there a month early, rather than you be a day late. And so the safety windows are extended backwards in time deliberately for that reason. I really expect that around the last days of August and into September, particularly around September 11th, is whenever the power grid is going to go down. The reason is because the dwarf star will be exactly on the equator. So if we get a chronomass ejection that's south of the equator, then by the time it gets out 93 million miles, then it's below the Earth. It's the ones that happen right around 9/11, whenever the dwarf star is right on the equator. That's the most likely time that the kill shot's going to happen. Now
It's kind of interesting you said 9/11. I mean, we got another September issue coming, just like we did with the World Trade Center. It's kind of interesting. Go ahead. I just had to say that. Go ahead.
Well, using the Illuminati numerology, what we're looking at is a marriage that coincides with a sacrifice. And extending it 10 years into the past, then we see the same thing, the marriage of their New World Order to the new, of their Illuminati group and all the others that are associated with them. Their marriage to their New World Order began back then as a betrothing process that is being fulfilled during this series of events associated with the approach of this star. So we're looking at a marriage of the New World Order Illuminati people to their New World Order at the same time that a sacrifice is taking place, and that sacrifice is the rest of us that are not included. So when you see these New World Order people talking about their New World Order, they're talking about after this event that's coming up. This is an extinction-level event, and it's the reason it's named Elenin. When you turn Elenin backwards, what do you get? Just look at it. 9/11. So what they're doing is they're rubbing this thing in our face, and they think that we're too stupid to figure it out, to be able to make the contingencies and to execute them on time. They think that we're too stupid and that they can just parade this stuff in front of us and that we're not going to figure it out. So what I've explained to you is the solar threat. The next threat – oh, if you want to comment on that, go ahead before I go to the next threat.
I was just going to say, well, as a student of the Bible, you're probably aware of the fact that, you know, a remnant, I guess people that are only awake are going to be aware of this. And doesn't mean that you won't, necessarily, you know, I'm sure there'll be lots of people in other places that will survive. But by and large, you're saying that, you know, a proactive approach to survival is important. Now, I'm going to say something about your group that's kind of afraid to having anybody if they're happening to listen. Folks, it takes... I hate Hillary Clinton. You already know that, with a passion. I shouldn't say hate. I despise her with every fiber of my disrespect. She's very evil. And I'm not trying to sound like her when I say it takes a community. Folks, the more people you have like-minded to work together, the better off you're going to be. So don't be afraid to have people around you. If you have a group and you're trying to not let anybody know about it, the ones you don't want to let know about it are the people that are nefarious and have this agenda and are trying to get you, you know, in one of these camps. The people that are understanding what's going on are like-minded. That's a whole other thing. Go ahead. You've got two other faces here. Go ahead and continue your next.
Right. Speaker. Okay. The second threat. We're identifying the primary threats here. There's a list as long as your arm of threats, but we're going to give you the three primaries. The first one was the solar threat. If that one kills you, the rest of these don't matter. So you need to get to a bug-out cavern with water with your survival group to survive that one. Then the second threat comes along on 9/26. If you go to my YouTube channel, then you'll see the 9/26 video, Terrell 03, as in MNO 3, and go to 9/26 warning video. Okay, that is whenever the perigee time is the time that this object reaches maximum velocity. After that, it begins slowing down. As it's slowing down, the equinox comes on September 23rd. That's the time that the ecliptic plane, which is the waist, the equator of the sun, and the celestial plane, which is the equator of the earth, intersect. Okay. 3 days after that, on 9/26, here comes the Elenin dwarf star directly
So virtually on the equinox. I mean, you're
virtually,
really.
Virtually, yes.
Yes, for all practical purposes, the effect of that equinox on our planet is going to be occurring at exactly the same time you're talking about that this event, this is going to come now. It's going to be at the closest point to us then. Is that what you're saying? Or no?
No, that's whenever the two planes intersect. So the waist of the sun, if you extend a line straight out from the equator of the sun and a line straight out from the equator of the earth all the way around, they intersect at the equinox. In the spring and the autumn. The autumn equinox is September 23rd. On September 26th, 3 days later, here comes the dwarf star. It passes directly between the sun and the earth, has a 0-0 declination at the waist of the earth on the same day as the alignment on 9/26.
So everything lines up at that equinox. You know, this is almost incredible. This is really incredible. I mean, it's not coming between us at some other date. It happens to be coming between us right at an equinox. I mean, this is incredible, folks. If you understand this, maybe Terrell could explain it better. But, you know, folks, these guys that are sailors and people on the oceans and, you know, water faring people, they pay attention to this equinox, don't they, Terrell, because it's important.
Yes. And the question comes out of, if I can divert just for a second. People ask me all the time about the control factor. The Russians came out with a warning that this thing was controlled on March the 1st. That's part of the research that's in the link. The reason that they believe this thing is controlled is because this dwarf star appears to be flying through a window. So if you're landing a spaceship on, at a particular place, when NASA brings in one of their spaceships, and they have to fly through a window. If they miss the window, they go around, and until they hit the window, then they can land. Well, mm-hmm. back in February, I've been tracking this thing since the beginning of the year, and back in February, the numbers were changing on the inbound part of this orbit, and the 9/11 date never changed. And the 11/22, the day they killed Kennedy, that's another alignment. But those two dates never changed, but they did on the inbound. And the Russians saw it in February, and I saw it, and we were thinking the same thing. And what it appears is that this object is being controlled, this dwarf star is being controlled to fly right through a perigee window on 9/11 deliberately so that it can reach the equinox position directly between the sun and the earth. Now, if this thing was a comet, it would be outgassing. It would be shedding its skin. It would be changing mass. And the JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, coordinates, the celestial coordinates would change. And they're not. As far as the perigee date, the alignment date, and the fall alignment date, those things are not changing, which tells you this thing has great mass and it's coming in like a brick. There's no way in the world that this thing is a comet. There's no way. That means it's mostly ice. There's no way.
Yes,
and the scientists and the scientists know that, and they should know that we know they know that, and that they're just waving our, they're just waving this information in front of us, and we're supposed to be idiots and believe what they're saying.
Well, he's right, folks. Terrell doesn't know it yet, but some of the listeners don't know this either. I worked on the Stardust project through Berkeley University with NASA. And folks, when you have a comet, you can see a trail. He's right. The reason why you wouldn't see a dark star, now not a black hole, you're not going to see a black hole because nothing escapes it. But when you have a star like this, what doesn't escape is still, even though it's not light, that a light still gets out from it, so to speak. It's still cloaking itself, kind of like consider it a semi-black hole, something that some things do get out of it, but not completely out of it. And so it's still kind of got that. But you know what? You're talking about just this star, which is, of course, apparently the most powerful body in this cluster of of objects that's coming toward us. And I want you to address the possibility of those other objects and what they might do. But go ahead with this part two part. This is
right.
A little interesting. So.
Yeah, this is the pole shift that's happening. Okay, on 9/26, which is the second threat, that's the most important day in this timeline is 9/26. That's the day that the dwarf star passes directly between the sun and the earth, and it breaks. Right. The magnetic portals. It passes right through the gravity trough that we talked about. It breaks the magnetic portals connecting the sun to the earth, and this little star gains polarity control of the earth from the sun. So what's been happening since 2004 is that this little star has been having a arm wrestling match with the sun. It's been trying to wrestle polarity control from the earth. That's the reason that the magnetic poles are migrating, is because this star is trying to include the earth and every other orbital in our solar system, by the way, into its mini solar system. So it's trying to gain magnetic control over us. And in doing so, the sun is compensating. So the sun is tilting us backwards and saying, no, this is my little Earth. You're not taking it. So that's the reason that the North Pole, and mostly, and the South Pole some, is migrating, because the sun is exerting extra force in order to keep the Earth tilted in straight up in the right direction. But on 9/26, the sun is going to lose that ability because the magnetic portals connecting the sun and the earth together are going to be broken. At that time, the magnetic portals between the sun and the star and the magnetic portals between the earth and the star are going to equal about 1 AU. all of Earth magnetism from that point for about 10 days, I speculate, will be directly through this star. So instead of getting our magnetism from the sun, it's going to come through this foreign star. So what happens is the sun is like the daddy, and the Earth is like the daughter, and this star coming in is like the husband that's taking us away. It comes in and breaks the connection with the father, which is the sun, and it is very near proximity at 0.396 AU away. It's just about a third the distance of the sun away from the Earth at that time. And for about 10 days, this husband is going to take the Earth along its side. And remember that we've passed perigee position, so it's slowing down. It's on the inside track. It's slowing down, and it's marching along with us. By the time we get to October 17th, this thing is only 21 million miles away, 0.232 AU.
Oh, my gosh. That's one quarter of the distance to the sun.
That's right.
That's incredible.
And it's slowing down as it's passing in front of us. And this gravity well, I don't believe we're going to be able to reach. See, we're getting into the third threat. So let me stop there, and let's go back just a little bit to 926. The pole shift. Now, the pole shift, it's not a true geological pole shift that's 180 degrees, as happens every so many million of years. What we're looking at is a polarity conflict between this star and our Earth. We know that there's a polarity conflict because of the North Pole, which is migrating much farther and much faster as this thing comes closer than the South Pole. So what we expect from our research is that whenever the magnetic portals between the sun and the Earth are broken, and this star, foreign star, takes polarity control, that the North Pole is going to be pointing straight away from the two stars for about a 10-day period. So that means instead of a 180-degree geological pole shift, we're looking at a 90-degree shift, pointing us straight backward. Now, the speed at which this happens is dependent upon the ratio of the masses of the two stars. So it depends on how big this thing is. And I don't have the data. NASA knows, but I don't know if this thing is half the mass of the sun or a quarter or a hundredth.
So it's kind of interesting. It's kind of interesting that they've pulled all their shuttles out of the sky and into a bunch of stuff now. You know,
there's a lot of intel that I have that's related. People that run these boards, I'm friends with them, and they have friends from NASA, and they've shown up with a year's worth of food, and they're heading for the hills because they don't have a place in the underground bunkers. There's a contingent that know what's going on, but they're not telling us the truth, but they're saving themselves. So there's a lot of related stories. People that own survival equipment supply companies, their entire inventory is being bought out, and they're being invited to join the elites in their underground bunkers. That's what's going around around the world right now as we speak. So that pretty much describes we're not finished yet. The breaking of the portals and the pole shift happens around 9:26. Now what the chart shows, the JPL chart, it shows that Ellie is rising above the celestial plane 1 degree per day. And what that means is that the Earth is going to be, remember we're looking at two magnets. We're looking at the Earth as a magnet with its magnetite deposits. We're looking at the sun as the controlling magnet, and then this foreign magnet's coming between us. That's what causes the Earth to tip backwards. So as this thing rises above the celestial plane, the Earth is going to continue to tip backwards about a degree per day. About 10 days is going to go by, and the northern hemisphere is going to experience, even though the Earth is rotating, it's going to experience about 10 days of complete darkness. The southern hemisphere is going to be facing the two stars. They're going to be exposed to any solar storms that's coming along. Okay, but about 10 days after 9:26, the first week in October, then there's going to be a pole shift reversal at the time that the sun regains polarity control. So those magnetic portals that are not able to reconnect every 8 minutes, all of a sudden are going to reconnect. And when they do, then the Earth is going to be tipped back up again, and I anticipate that it's going to be a 100-degree shift. And we know how big the sun is. The 9:26 shift, the severity of it, the water is going to crawl right up on the land. How far exactly, I don't know, because we don't know the mass differential. But whenever the pole shift reversal happens, the sun is going to regain polarity control, and that is going to be an enormous event. So the pole shift reversal could actually be more dangerous than the original pole shift on 9:26. That's possible. So that takes us – that's the second threat. That's the pole shift.
Well, before you go to the third one, is there any guess on your part as the mass, Is it a mass that's more powerful than our sun, or is it less? You got any guesses?
Yeah, I would speculate that it's, if I was to guess, I would say this thing is maybe a quarter the mass of the sun. It's a, okay. dwarf star. And remember that a dwarf star that is half sun mass is 50% larger than the Earth. So I would speculate that this thing is a little bit smaller than the Earth, and that the mass is a quarter or even maybe, I'm hoping smaller. The reason I know that it has great mass is because if you read the Mincer-Amer-Bosich paper to Cornell, April 11th of this year, then you're going to see that he makes the comment that the seismicity pattern extends back to 1965. So this thing has been creating earthquakes like the Japan quake and the Chile quake, large ones, since 1965. And since it can shift Earth axis from over 6 AU away on February 27, 2010, that tells you that this thing has great mass.
And whenever
whenever it's only 0.232 AU away, we should expect that we need to be inside of a deep cavern and hiding from this thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you get it doesn't have to be as big, but when you change the distance away to 1/4, if it's only, say, for example, I think they can visualize. If you have some mass that's 1/4 the sun, let's take for example, just for a shot in the dark, but it's only 1/4 the distance to the sun, folks, you're talking about something that affects the planet with the power that our sun has. You've got a very powerful. Well, let me ask you this question because we're talking about it coming in. Is there any guess as to how often this thing comes around? I mean, has it been part of a cycle that's caused problems on the planet before? That's where I'm headed.
Yes. If you read the Sumerian text, then they talk about it. They call it Nibiru. There's a lot of speculation that this thing comes on a 3,600-year cycle, but that is incorrect. The reason is because something on an elliptical orbit like this, when it comes into the inner solar system, then it interacts with the planets and with the sun. And upon leaving, the orbit changes. So whenever it passes in front of the Earth at 0.232, it's very near our Earth. It's going to be slowed down in orbit just like we're going to be speeded up. And so there's no way that anybody can tell us if it's going to come back in 3,600 years or if it's going to come back in 1,000 years or 2,000 years. We can speculate that it is going to come back again, but we cannot tell you exactly when. Because even comets or anything that comes in, they can come in on a 10,000-year orbit, and they can leave and interact with the planets and the sun and come back in a million years. So there's just really no way to tell. We do know this thing has come before. My belief is that this thing appeared with Noah and appeared with Moses. It's coming now to start the day of the Lord, and then it's going to come again at the end of the age. So it's going to come back again exactly on the day and at the time that the Lord God says that it's supposed to come back.
Okay, well, let's go to this next step you wanted to get into.
The third threat. The third threat, the focus. See, the first one was September 11th, the solar threat. The second one was the pole shift, September 26th. The third one is October 17th. That's the focus of the core. The inner core of our Earth is going to be at its hottest around October the 17th. The reason is because of the near proximity of Ellie to the Earth at only 0.232. That means that the magnetic portals that are connecting the star and our Earth are only going to be a quarter of the distance of the sun. That means the maximum number of those conduits inside are going to be active. So we're going to be receiving massive magnetism from the sun, which is hyperactive because of the relationship it has with the star in the first place. But then we're getting a double dose from the Elenin dwarf star itself. So the inner core is going to be at its hottest point on October the 17th or shortly after that. And what that does is the calderas that are bulging now, the Yellowstone caldera is bulging to the point now the seabeds are rising so much that they're dumping water into the forests. And we should expect that between October the 1st and October the 17th, that the calderas, the one in northern Europe, that the one in the western United States, that they're going to bulge and bulge and bulge like Jiffy popcorn, and then they're going to break. So so you've got the original threat, the solar threat, then the pole shift threat, and if you survive those, then you have the pyroclastic flows from the calderas, that, you know, and the Earth flipping around for the third threat. that's coming. So the answer is still to be in a cavern in the central part of the United States. If you answer, if you are there for this, to meet the solar threat and you hang around and you don't leave, then you're able to endure through the pole shift and you're able to endure through the third threat from the Earth core. The next threat that is associated with this is 1122. That's the alignment that's similar to the 2011 alignment with the Japan quake. The difference is that the Earth is at its hottest and the tectonic plates are floating on lightweight magma. And the Japan quakes as the Earth rotates and comes into alignment with the two stars this time, then we're going to have gigantic earthquakes all around the world. And you're going to have tsunamis from the ones that happen, that the quakes that happen underwater. And so there's, so once you get past the solar threat, the pole shift threat, the Earth heating up, the liquefaction of the Midwest, you're still not safe. Because if you run down by the seashore, you can be killed by a tsunami from the seismic events associated with the 1122 alignment. And the tsunamis that are happening all over the Earth at that point.
Well, weather conditions. You know, right now it's been extremely hot in Texas, central, south, continental U.S. Is this going to continue? Will this cause this to change? What's your predictions about weather in regards to what this might be doing to
us? All the planets in our solar system are heating up. Like I said, the magnetic mm-hmm. connection between the star and the Earth, the magnetite deposits are heating up. That's heating up the core. That's what's caused the magnetites in the north are larger, so the North Pole is the one that has suffered the most. It's shed most of its water. Now, when you destroy the ability of the ice sheets to shed water, that kills the ocean conveyor. The ocean conveyor has stopped in the Gulf of Mexico because there's not sufficient water coming from the North Pole to feed the Atlantic conveyor. So that's what powers our weather. So the weather systems, the jet stream, when's the last time you saw the jet stream up in Canada like this for such a long duration? Hasn't happened in my lifetime.
Yeah,
so what's happening is, what happens is that caldera, this is my speculation, the caldera that's bulging out west is causing the ancient lava tubes in the central part of the United States to fill. That's heating up the ground, and that's what you're talking about in the Ozarks with the water that's heating up there. That's becoming warmer too. Now the air mass is 10 degrees hotter than it's supposed to be, and then you do not have the Gulf, the weather patterns from the Gulf because the Gulf conveyor is broken. So you got a broken weather, weather system. So what that does is heats up the air mass, and that creates the high pressure dome over the land. Then the high pressure dome, once it's there, then you have the winds that circulate counterclockwise, and then you have you have abnormal flow coming from the Atlantic Ocean over Georgia, over Alabama. See, everything's going the wrong way and backwards.
Yeah.
So I would expect that the Earth core is going to continue to heat up as LA gets closer and closer. High pressure dome is going to try to move off to the northwest. It's going to try to, but it's going to continue to reform again and again and again. Now these people using their Tesla technology, the HARP technology to pile and stack all this water that they've been doing over the central United States, they have the ability with their Tesla technology to interrupt this cycle that it's in right now, this heat cycle. They can do that with a series of low-pressure areas that are man-made and created. They've been doing this because the ocean conveyors are broken. The system is broken. They've been trying to recreate, through man-made means, the Tesla technology, the normal springtime weather patterns with the tornadoes and everything else until it got out of hand. So Dutch Sense, if you're watching his videos, he was able to predict the Joplin tornadoes. He was able to predict the cities even that were going to be attacked because he was watching the harp rings, the scalar squares, and this and that. He was able to predict. So I'm telling you all that to say that it's difficult for me to predict what's going to happen whenever they can use the technology and do the opposite thing.
Right, right. Now the central U.S. or the North American continent has had this high pressure dome, folks, and it's been spinning. The winds have been spinning in a clockwise direction, which brings when you get down to like around Tennessee, Kentucky, Arkansas, and in the south, the winds start coming from the opposite direction they've come in the past. Because of that, everybody's going, hey, things are coming from the direction we've never seen before for such a long period of time. Now, you've seen them come at you from that direction from a storm, and then they go back. But this has been constant. And now, Terrell, they're talking about this going on another 6 or 8 weeks. I just heard from some of the reports, commodity reports out of Texas, southern Kansas, and well, in the Midwest. If we have another week without any rain, the crops are now, farmers are now reporting 100% loss of their crops. So, you know, if it's predicted to go another 6 weeks, it's over. It's just the food's just over. I just kind of wondered what your thoughts were on about that.
So. Well, first they piled water in the mountains throughout the winter using their scalar technology. Then they piled water over the New Madrid, and levees broke, and they washed out a bunch of farmland. And then they did the same thing with the Missouri Basin, and levees broke, and they washed out even more. So there's been a destruction of the breadbasket of the United States deliberately by, I don't know what you want to call them, the elites that control our corrupt government. And now they're doing it through the use of the heat. So the Ellie's getting closer, heating up the core. They've got this high-pressure dome over the central part of the United States, and now that's going to feed itself. I believe that their predictions are correct, because as it becomes drier, you don't have any moisture, and the heat, then it's a self-fulfilling prophecy to say that it's going to continue. But I think you had that backwards. It's counterclockwise. Counterclockwise. And they haven't seen that before, but that's going to continue. And as long as you have that high-pressure dome there, then you cannot have the water formation. But like I said, they could stop that at any time using their scalar technology, their HARP technology. They could stop that cycle at any time, but the game is to destroy the breadbasket of the United States. The end game is going to be achieved by the breaking of those dams, the release of all that water. Ellie's going to get here and shake the Midwest and the liquefaction. That's the end game of the game that they're playing right now. So they're actually using Ellie to fulfill their need, which is to divide the United States into two parts.
Well, what they're doing is they're working with something. They can't control how powerful it is by counteracting it, so they're using it to assist their agenda, not to fight it. And so they're enhancing where they want the effects to be in order to accomplish exactly what you're saying. And you know what? How long do you suppose, and then we're going to take a break after this answer, Terrell, so we'll all take us a biological break here. But how long do you think they've had an idea that this was going to be what they were going to do and knew about this?
I could take that question in different ways. Do you mean how long have they known about this dwarf star coming?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
They've known about this for a very, very, very long time. Okay. Before they killed John F. Kennedy on 11/22, that's the fall alignment of this date.
Okay.
That's part of the timeline. 9/11, that's part of the timeline. For a very long time that they've known that this thing has been coming in. Now, as far as their plan to divide the United States and all that stuff, I don't know how long. You know, I know because of the timeline and the data from the investigation that they've known for more than 30 years. But as far as the dividing the United States, the destruction of the Salt Dome and all that, I'm not sure if they had that plan 30 years ago, but I am very confident in my conclusion that that's exactly what they're doing today.
Okay, guys, we're going to take a break. I'm going to let Terrell chat with the folks in the chat room. And, Terrell, why don't you get another link up there for those maybe that have showed up to your schedule, your assessment time frame schedule, maybe some other information you've got. And we'll be right back after we listen to Han picked out some music for us, Terrell. It's called Liquid Flows. So we'll be right back in about 5 minutes, folks. We'll be right back. Welcome to the Waterman Files. It's July the 29th. My guest today's been Terrell, who's been telling us about this object, Elenin, coming in. Ellie, as he calls the sun that Elenin is orbiting. And I have to say, folks, this is a pretty convincing argument, I have to tell you. You would have to really have some pretty heavy arguments to figure out a way around what he's saying. Now, there was one caveat, and that would about be the only one, but with pictures now since, what, May 29th, Terrell, was that when that picture that came through from the doctor that showed the kind of the crescent-looking gravity wave of the object coming in?
I'm unaware of any picture that Dr. Byron Glenn. I'm confident that he had the ability to get the picture, but he did not reveal that to us. He verbally, myself and Envy listened to him for 20 minutes describing what he saw, but he refused to give us a picture, and then he went nuts on us and decided to start his own group and kick us under the bus.
Well, we're going to try and fix that, Terrell. And the interesting thing is that he's clear over in the earthquake zone of New Madrid, and why he's still there, you got me. But I think we can probably one-up him on that anyway, as far as that goes. We'll talk about that some more. But in the meantime, folks, if you've got any questions for Terrell, give them to us in all caps, and Hans will grab them off the chat room and make sure we get them. And so in this hour, what I would like to talk about a little bit more, and now I think you've kind of finished your timeline, or have you got some more, Terrell, you'd like to kind of talk about on that chart? I know we can discuss more about it, but go ahead and tell me, you have got any more?
No, well, we pretty much covered it with the three threats. If you look at my video for the threats, then the threat assessment chart is in the details, and you can go through all that information and bring yourself up to date as far as, you know, your listeners.
And if any one of these were one quarter of what you're saying, we're still talking about some pretty important issues here, folks. I think the smoking gun that you can depend on right now, if you're a listener, to find out whether or not this is true, is the fact that right now, and you already know this, this is a smart listening audience, Terrell. You guys out there have already known that all these planets on our solar system are having storms, and they're all warming up. And, of course, like they said, he said, there's it's all cover stories. And, of course, our Arguso radio, when they had the big meeting, you know, that they had for, you know, the global warming, and right about that time, of course, the emails got released that just slam-dunked the crap that Al Gore was putting out, and they were having that meeting. Where was that? Was that in Amsterdam? I can't remember, folks. We had a lot of coverage. We had an 11-hour broadcast. So much has gone on, I can't remember. Out of Europe. Copenhagen. That's right, Hans. It was Copenhagen. We had Copenhagen, where they had the global warming conference, and of course, it just got completely obliterated with facts. It just didn't get them anywhere they thought they were going to go, because we, the people, were able to communicate. Now, folks, Terrell's told you something here that is extremely hard to argue against. I mean, this is the kind of debate you would put there in the academia. I mean, if I saw this and it had to do with my field of science and it was in the school that I was a professor at, I'd be sitting there hard-pressed to say he's wrong. I'd try to argue, but just to figure it out. That's how you come to some good scholarship of a topic, is to, you know, put the opposite argument in there. But this is pretty tight. This is pretty tight. Let's get some of these questions out there, Terrell. One of them is, why would 7 billion souls come to this planet if it's going to be destroyed? I'm going to chime up on this one first, Terrell. Why not? A lot of people think, you know, they've chosen to come to this planet. That's kind of a redundant question. Because it's saying something, you know, what's the purpose for coming to this planet? First of all, this is a belief system I don't have, but let's play devil's advocate here and believe it. And here's what it is. If you chose to come here knowing that it was going to happen, well, that just begs the question. You come here, you knew it was going to happen, so what? The issue that I have with that kind of thing is, well, apparently you had a job to do, and, you know, dying isn't the worst thing in the world. So there you go. Let's go to another one here. We've got a bunch. Terrell, question here. Terrell, if it is going to be so hot, does that mean our waters that create a cloud will create a cloud cover? Vaporize? Did you see that, Terrell? You want me to ask that again?
Well, it doesn't quite work that way. When the ocean conveyor breaks, then you do not have the transmission of hot from the equator to the north and the cold to the south. What happens is the north pole, the sheets up north are replenished very quickly over a period of maybe 4 or 5 years. Because the conveyor is broken. So the people in the north have extreme cold weather, north and south. And then the people on the equator have warm weather. And the people in the between have something that's in between. And it's going to be that way until there's sufficient water in the north and the south. See, the south pole is going to come under attack from the solar storms during the pole shift. So that a lot of the sheets down south are going to be destroyed. Then that is going to have to be replenished before the waters begin to melt again, and then the ocean conveyors start up, and then that's going to take some time for everything to get back to normal. Before then, the weather pattern will be the last thing to come back online in maybe 4 or 5 or 6 years, you know, depending on how fast those sheets can be replenished. So it's very difficult to know the exact timeline. You also have the Earth core that's heating up to its maximum. And how long is that going to take to cool down? So it's like cooking your pie in the oven. You turn it off, it doesn't go down to zero instantly. So we're going to be dealing with extra heat on the Earth for a few years, I would say. But no, I don't see that cloud effect that he's talking about, the vaporization. I don't see those things happening. This is different than the end of the age. This is how the day of the Lord starts. And as you know, if you study Scripture, that the day of the Lord comes as a thief in the night. So if the prophets can't see it, they can't prophesy about it. There's nothing in Scripture about this event that's coming up. It's the end of the age that the prophets do see, and that's whenever we're going to be on a different timeline. That's when Ellie's going to be much closer. Instead of 0.232, maybe we're looking at 0.0015, and one of these orbitals is actually going to strike the Earth, and Revelation 8 is going to be fulfilled. Wormwood is going to be, I believe, one of these orbitals, but that's going to be when Ellie comes at the end of the age. We're still more than 1,000 years away from that event.
with one of the, what if we, though, we had an issue with one of these orbitals now? I mean, we're talking about how close this brown dwarf is. And so a question, too, a lot of, from FreedomCaster out of the chat room says, a lot of scientists contend if a brown dwarf was in our solar system, it would already be catastrophic. Well, I guess it depends on how big it is, right?
I mean, that's right, on the mass. But remember, it's like the black hole. The things inside the well are affected greatly, but outside the well, they're not affected hardly at all. So it depends on the shape of this gravity well, which I believe to be a deep, deep, deep V-shaped. So in a black hole, it extends down into a singularity, very deep. And what we have is a V-shape that is shallower, but still much deeper than our sun in as far as the size of the well itself. So when you stretch a measuring tape across the well, it's actually kind of small if you want to compare it to our sun that extends so far out in our solar system. The orbitals, I do not believe, are going to affect the Earth on this trip. The reason is because the minimum distance on October the 17th is 21 million, it's a little over 21 million miles. And from observations, the V-shape, the orbitals are going in and out of this photon cloud very quickly. So the proximity is very close. The asteroid field that's following it is in tight proximity. It's very, very close. And whenever you draw the orbit diagrams, you see that this thing had two chances to strike the Earth. That was on April the 25th. If Earth was exactly in that orbit line on that day, at that time, the Earth would have been struck. And the other one is on October the 17th. If the Earth was further forward in orbit, then we would have been struck, but we're still 21 million miles away. So it missed the opportunity. There's only two chances out of our entire orbit. The chances of this thing striking us, the orbitals, I believe, are astronomically low. We're not going to be hit by anything. The effect is going to be gravitational on the alignments and the proximity around October the 17th, and magnetically, which that's been happening since 2004. And I believe on alignments, we're going to continue to have earthquakes plus 6 seismicity until maybe 2020, maybe 2017, something like that. If you take the 2004 and flip it past 2011, it's going to be about the same amount of time. As this thing goes and leaves us on alignments, the Earth is going to continue to have earthquakes until this thing gets out about 30 years, as a matter of fact.
Okay. Folks, understand about these gravity wells, not that you have a lot of time, but if you wanted to run out right now and kind of get some kind of idea, the best book that I can recommend is the one that I got from my graduate studies under Kip Thorne out of Caltech in Southern Cal. Now, Kip Thorne wrote a book called Black Holes and Time Warps, which is a textbook for the class that I took. Now, its foreword is written by Stephen Hawking. It's probably one of the most well-written books, so that you can kind of understand what these gravity wells are about. Now, who's Stephen? Who's Kip Thorne? Well, he's a colleague of Stephen Hawking. These are the kind of guys that go around and make bets, about who's right and who's wrong. Well, guess what? Kip Thorne bet with Stephen Hawking. Hawking lost the bet. And so, anyway, Kip Thorne happened to be the very first man in academia that had the guts to say, hey, we have something called black holes. There really is something called black holes. He's been elected to the American Academy of Arts and Science clear back in 72 and the National Academy of Science in 73, Russian Academy of Sciences and American Philosophy, Philosophical Society in 99. He goes on and on. But anyway, he's a renowned scientist out of, Caltech. So, the book is called Black Holes and Time Warps. And, I think it'd probably give you some kind of, and he's very good at explaining. Of course, he's a professor. The course was, by the way, I was barely able to hang on to it, even with, some science behind me. Because these folks that were in there were physics majors. I wasn't a physics major, but it was so interesting, I just had to take it. So anyway, that might give you a handle on what he's talking about, these gravity wells. Okay, let's go to some more questions. Missed one here. It says, the Inuit are already said it's too hot in southern art and in southern Ontario, they had a day of 50 degrees centigrade. What can we do, or is it too late? Question out of the chat room.
What can we do about what?
Well, I'm not sure about Canada. What's your thoughts then about Canada? Give me what you think is going to happen with Canada.
Canada is in a very similar situation to the United States. If you're in the eastern part of Canada, you're downwind of far too many nuclear power plants. So whenever the pole shift happens, you have the Fukushima effect. So you're going to have flooding. You're going to have the inability to cool the reactors. And 90 minutes later, you're going to begin meltdown. And you're going to be downwind, you know, if you're Ontario, you're going to be downwind of about 21 nuclear power plants. And only one of them needs to melt down. And you have serious trouble. So in Canada, similar to the United States, you want to avoid the East Coast and the West Coast to avoid the three threats. And you need a cavern. And they're not very easy to find in Canada. I have friends in Canada. Marcia, she's Traders Beware on YouTube. She's forming a group up there. And I would say you don't want to be downwind of the caldera. So you need to be far enough north, which I believe that she is. And you need to be in a cavern with water if possible. I don't like mines that are man-made because when things start shaking, especially if you're near a fault zone. If you're on a stable plate, then it's altogether different. You can be safe in a mine if it's on a stable plate in the central part of Canada. But in the east and the west, you have a similar situation of the people down in the United States. Then if you can get there, I still believe that the Ozarks are the safest place to be on the North American continent, if you can get there. We do have people coming from Canada to the Ozarks, but otherwise you need to be in the central part. You're looking for a cavern, and you're looking for one with water. You want to have a large survival group that has a medical contingent and a military contingent to keep morale up. When people start dying, then you start losing morale, and everybody dies. So you need medical people. You need military people. Lots of food for everybody. Remember that you're not just dealing with LE threats, you're dealing with the collapse of our society. When the power goes off, you're going to see what we mean. When the power grid goes down, communications grid goes down, people start running out of food. They're going to begin piling up into packs, gangs, and they're going to be going house to house. They're going to be looking for your food. They figure if people's in there, they have food. And you need to be part of a large survival group in order to survive that kind of situation. In my survival topic, if you go to usmessageboard.com, there's a video right at the top that shows, uses the example of Chile, 2001, and what happened to the people that tried to hold up in their houses. It just does not work. So you need to be forming yourself with a large survival group, strong leadership, medical contingent, military contingent, if possible. And that's going to increase your ability to survive what's coming. That's pretty much the same for everybody around the world.
Okay, another question. It says the Eurasian plate started moving since Japan. Is there any connection? The European plates, I would guess, are over, I guess, between Europe and Asia.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I got interrupted.
No problem.
Yeah, that's all associated with Eli that's coming in. Mm-hmm. The magma's heating up, the joints. See, that magma has to go somewhere, and it's reaching up between the tectonic plates, and it's lubricating. So as Eli gets closer and closer, the heating up effect. What you have with whenever Chile moved, you had 188 days go by until the Christchurch quake. Then you had 188 days go by until the Japan quake. Now we're looking at September the 16th is the 188 days extending over to the North American continent when we expect, see, this thing is turning in a counterclockwise position on our planet. And so the pressure that's building up, it was released from Chile in 2010. It was released, and that was in the winter. And then in the summer of September 4th, actually, that's when Christchurch, the focal point of those events happened. And then 188 days later, that's March 11th, with Japan, you see now everything's turning counterclockwise, and the big plate up in the upper Midwest of the United States, that's the one that's going to move next. It hasn't moved in a very long time. We should expect it's going to be a terrible event whenever that thing finally moves. It's expected to move around September the 16th.
Another question, will the seismic shifting open up new safe zones or caverns? My question would be, well, if you're still alive to get in one of those caverns, but I've got some thoughts about that too. Go ahead and answer the question. Will the seismic shifting open up any new safe zones?
No. That's the problem. What we're looking at is a terraforming of our planet by this star that's coming by. There are going to be new land masses that are going to appear, especially off the coast of Australia, out on the other side of New Zealand. That's expected. if you look at the future maps of Edgar Cayce and the others, then you'll see new land masses are expected. And they should be, because the water that's shifting around is going to place heavy weight on land masses at the same time that the tectonic plates are floating. So just do the math. For every action, there's equal opposite reaction. The problem is that you cannot go to a safe zone that's on a newly formed mass. You have to find a safe zone that's on an existing mass. And, for example, the United States, only one-third or even less of that, of the continent, of the country of the United States is safe. It's in the central part. It has to be to the south because of the caldera and the nuclear threat. So in the United States, very small percentage of safe zone. That's why I'm sending people to the Ozarks specifically. But the Australia only has like four outcroppings of caverns. Brazil only has two. They have underground rivers that have the water supply. So you're very limited in other countries. The United States is actually lucky to have so many places that we can go. I mean, so many thousands of caverns, with water. The Europe is not so lucky. The caldera there is bulging just like the Yellowstone caldera. So what happens is the caldera bulges and bulges. It doesn't have a relief valve. If you like Japan, look at all the volcanoes that are going off at the same time. The pressure is being released, so they're lucky. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But
in the Western United States, you don't have it. You don't have the relief valve. In Northern Europe, you don't have the relief valve. So that caldera, that ancient caldera, that one that has not gone off in a very long time, is bulging the same way that Yellowstone is. And it's going to pop this very same way. I expect that it'll pop the first 2 weeks of October. But what happens is the ocean invades, and it's like a levee breaking. And here comes the ocean. And whenever the entire region collapses, even all the way down to Romania, the mountains that are there, you think you're safe in the mountains, but you're not. The first safe zone you have is in Turkey. And I've done a lot of analysis for people in Romania and all those countries over there. And I tell them to go to Turkey, and they just laugh at me. Nobody wants to go to Turkey. So I tell them the only place that you can go from Europe, the only safe zone that is safe, is the Pyrenees Mountains on the Spain side. You want to be 1,200 to 1,700 feet above sea level. You want to shade towards the Mediterranean side because the primary threats during the pole shifts are going to come from the Atlantic Ocean.
Okay,
that's the
great only
safe zone I know of. The plateau there is about 2,000 feet average, and it dips down right in front of the Pyrenees. You don't want to be too high during this threat because the solar threat is going to peel back the layers. The magnetosphere is going to
You'll have too much damage. Too much damaging rays coming in through the.
That's right. But also the exosphere is going to want to be peeled back by the solar storms. The magnetosphere is not going to be there to protect it. So you're going to have a peeling back of the atmosphere, and it's going to continue to go down, 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 depending on the severity. The Earth is going to have to recover from that.
So you don't want to get too high. You really don't want to get too high.
The people in Denver that have their massive facility there, they have environmental control systems. So they're separated from their problem. I think they have other problems. I think that the Rocky Mountain Ridge is actually going to break farther north than what they think. I think that they're in trouble with that facility. But you cannot be in a cavern position next door to them and expect that you're going to be safe at 5,000 feet. It's just not going to happen. You want to be between 1,000 and 2,000 feet and shading towards 1,000 feet. You want to be 250 feet inland. But if you're near a caldera area, then you just need to evacuate the entire area. Because nobody can tell you the prevailing wind whenever the Earth is being tilted around during pole shifts. So the western side of the United States is not safe. The entire northern Europe is not safe. You need to get beyond the Pyrenees onto the Spain side. You don't want to stay on the French side of the Pyrenees, because whenever you have no power, your vehicle doesn't work, and then you wake up at the last moment and realize you have to go to Spain, you're not going to be able to get through the Pyrenees Mountains. Mm-hmm. You're going to extinguish all your supplies and all of your stuff before you can actually get there. So you're going to go ahead and make the trip to the Spain side, find yourself a big, giant cavern for your survival group, and that's where you want to be. And I think whenever you emerge, you're going to realize that everything in Northern Europe is underwater, just like the Western United States.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, well, we're not going to have a good spot to go there. I want to tell Hans that our next guest, have him stand by. We're gonna do some more stuff here. And Hans, if you want to add him to our discussion, that's fine with me. And we'll have him on when we get kind of through some more issues here. So I'm sure he can make that happen. So I want to thank Eli for being patient with us. And Eli, are you with us?
Hello.
Hi, Eli. I want you to, I've still got my first guest on. We're talking about Elanin and this object coming toward us, and it's been an incredible hour and a half, and we're not done. And I want you to be included in this because you're going to be talking about some other stuff. But he's just gone through some threat assessments here for both Europe, North America. I've got to say that you know, he's talking about a lot of things that Eli might be familiar with. He's a scholar of the Bible too, and that's that we've got people underground. And, you know, he's recommending that. I can understand that. I mean, let me tell you, the atmosphere, folks, protects us here on the planet from about two-thirds to three-fourths of the damaging cosmic rays that primarily come in from the solar, from the sun. There are other rays that come from the universe, and they're just as deadly. Now, one-fourth of it is protected to maybe one-third is our magnetic field. And if Terrell's correct here, we're talking about a wild array of changes, not just to maybe the planet, but even just to the magnetic field being flip-flopped, messed up, so forth, pulled flat like a pancake and disappearing, means that one-fourth to one-third of our protection from damaging, deadly, cosmic solar rays is gone, and so we could be in a world of hurt for a few days. Okay, I want to ask you something, Terrell. You gave this on the time bomb, but let's reiterate. Let's say they got to go underground, and how long? Let's say they go underground and they were able to get something, say, third week of August or so. How long do they or should they be expecting to be there? A month or two?
Well, that depends. If you're in the central part of the United States and the caldera out west breaks the first 2 weeks of October, then you're not going to want to be running around outside in case the northeasterly flow is not in place. So we could have a southeasterly flow, for example.
Oh, okay.
So you're not going to want to go anywhere. 11:22 is whenever you have the fall alignment, and Ellie is only 0.58 AU away, just a little over half the distance of the sun. So instead of like Japan on 3/11/2011 at 2.1 AU, you're looking at 0.58. So the effect, you have to imagine, you know that the gravitational effect is equal to the square of the distance. So we're looking at a much closer distance. That's why, as the Earth rotates, we're expecting to see tsunamis affected with that. And remember that you're also talking about the collapse of our society. So there's a lot more threats in these three primaries that I'm describing for you. And with the collapse of society, people that do manage to survive to make it to their caverns, when they run out of food, guess where they have to go to get their food? It's not going to be down at the local store. They're going to be trying to get it from other survival groups. So it could be a dog-eat-dog situation, which is why I suggest that you build the largest group possible, because it's going to be gangland warfare. And what typically happens is, if you go back to Bible days, that the large gangs absorb the smaller gangs, and the larger gangs usually kill all the men, they take the women and the children, all the supplies to make their group stronger. It's basically what happens.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, okay. Let's talk about the fact that we've got this timeline. We kind of got an idea that we need to do this. And I want to kind of kick some ideas out to you, Terrell, about, you know, what we can do. Now, I'm going to be talking to you folks that are available or able to do this in this North American continent. Now, this might be also something you could do in Europe if you knew where they were. But what I'm getting ready to say is there are a lot of commercial caves, folks, in the Ozarks. You've got Marvel Cave in Branson, Missouri. Now, there's a cavern inside there that is hundreds of feet high. It's huge. They have extensively paved it. They've lit it. They have air systems already. They even have alternative energy and alternative generators in that cavern, and it's for people to come in as a tourist. Tons and tons and tons of people come in there every year by the hundreds of thousands.
Busload, right.
Busloads. Now, we've got the Onyx Cave. We've got the Merrimack Caverns. We have
some places like these. They're commercial. Terrell, what would you say that even if you, you know, at the last minute, let's just say everybody's in a panic, they don't have a group, they can't find a group, they don't have anywhere to go, what would happen if these people just took a vacation and went to Branson, Missouri and got a ticket to go in Marvel Cave and maybe got 2 days in a row so they could just hang around in the caverns for a couple of, would that, I mean, at least that would seem to me at least be some kind of protection. So that at least they could go there with their bug out bag. And, you know, these people that walk in these caves, a lot of times they have backpacks on anyway. What's your thoughts about approaching a commercial cave?
That's my recommendation to people that wake up at the last minute is to head for the Ozarks is the best place to be, and to these commercial caverns. You know, if you have 100 people standing outside and the solar storms come and nobody can go anywhere, then the place that you're going to go is inside the cavern. So at least you've given yourself a chance to survive what's coming.
Okay. Terrell, can I get a question?
Go ahead,
in here?
Eli.
Yeah,
Terrell, this is Eli James, and my guest today, is Terrell. Eli is a correspondent of prophetic information, and he was going to start this week with some nefarious personalities of bad revolutions. So,
but
go ahead, Eli.
Many of the hosts, yeah. I have a sanctuary set aside in central Illinois, far away from any superhighway. Do you recommend having a berm-type underground, sanctuary where you can hide out? And how many days do you think we'd have to be able to hide out underground? I think underground is really the only way to go. I think the radiation factor that Doc Waterman brought up is real. And, staying in a house above ground may not be good enough.
You're absolutely correct. I'm looking at your position. I'm pulling up Google Earth now. I believe that you're not in a safe zone there.
No, I'm not. Well, I'm in Chicago right now. So.
Yeah. Are you planning on moving to the Ozarks to meet all these threats? Or are you planning on staying up there near Chicago?
Well, I have a place in central Illinois that, I have a sanctuary ready should that time, be necessary, okay? Sounds like from what you're saying, it's going to be necessary when Elanin is at 0.58, units away from between the Earth and the Sun.
Well, there's Eli, get in the chat room. Are you in the chat room?
No, I'm not.
Okay, let me give you in our little chat window a link to his schedule. I just put it in there for you. Kind of take a look at this schedule, and you'll see the threats start before that, what you were talking about, the 0.58. Well, that's in November. The threat assessment that he's put together starts in possibly August, but he has a September 11th. Isn't that incredible? And then we have three events, and the first one's in September, the last one's in November, and so, he was in remarking earlier that with this New Madrid issue that the Great Lakes is going to rip open and go on in down to the Gulf. That's what you were saying, right, Terrell?
That's right. And I believe that you're going to be in the liquefaction zone.
It doesn't matter. Along the Illinois River, the Illinois River would roughly, go straight from the Great Lakes to the Mississippi.
Yeah, that's the one. Well, I would think.
You only have about 650 feet of elevation there. Oh, in the Ozarks, you're going to have 1,200 to 1,300 feet. And you're in an unstable, very, very unstable place between the Missouri Basin and the Mississippi Basin.
Okay.
And this area is going to liquefy.
What do you mean by liquefy?
Talking about the whole ground is going to shake. You see all this water you have north of you? You see how the dams?
Yeah, Great Lakes.
This is the Missouri Basin. No, I'm not talking about the Great Lakes. I'm talking about the freshwater that's behind all these dams.
Okay.
And the saturation of North Dakota, South Dakota.
You've
got so much water. Well, whenever Ellie gets here, the New Madrid fault zone becomes active, and it begins shaking, and the salt dome down Louisiana, Gulf of Mexico way, that is destroyed. And what happens is the entire Midwest liquefies. I don't know if you've seen a future map from the Navy, but they're showing, I believe, that your area is going to be underwater after this event. And okay. You may want to think about
getting
your survival group to the Ozarks. You're going to want to think about moving in that direction to meet the solar threat. But then later in the timeline, later in the timeline is whenever the liquefaction happens, the first 2 weeks of October, you're going to want to remain in the Ozarks. And I believe when you look back into your area that you're calling a sanctuary, I believe that it's not going to be there. I think it's going to be underwater.
Well, it looks like Eli, you might need to give me a call. I'm sitting here on a granite mountaintop. Okay. The old mountaintop isn't 3,000 feet, though. Yeah. I think we're at about 1,300, 1,400.
Time to build a submarine.
Okay.
Captain Nemo.
John Moore mentioned, too, that he has, of course, contacts with the Navy. And they showed him a map, which he couldn't get a copy of, but he did try and, you know, get a picture of it and try and redraw it. He's saying go to the Ozarks, and many, many from his presentations. And by the way, you're probably familiar with him, Terrell, but he's been briefing a lot of government agencies about the potential that he has seen too, from the information that he's got, and it's coming from a different folks. It's coming from a whole different direction. From a whole nother source, and when you're in the intelligence world, we would take information and we would, if we have, say, different sources telling us the same thing, things get up pretty high. And if it's even at a 10%, like I've already told you before, when the threat of something is at 10% and it happens to include the death of many people or important people, or the death of one in particular.
You guys go ahead.
Then we end up having a situation where you act upon it. And we're talking about the potential here of dying in a cataclysmic extinction-level event. Now, let me ask you, if it's only a 10% possibility, let me get you a picture of dying at a rate of 10%. I want you to go out. I don't want you to do this, but I want you to mentally go here with a picture. Like I've said before, go get that revolver that has 10 bullet chambers in it. I want you to empty it and put one real bullet in one chamber, spin the chamber, and put it to your head and play Russian roulette. Now, when you start thinking about 10% possibility of dying, and you put it that 10% in that gun, literally, mathematically, put the odds at 10% in that gun, and you spin the chamber to shoot, to pull the trigger with it on your head. Now do you see how important even 10% is? And I'm going to tell you, folks, that this argument, this possibility, and the amount of evidence we've had over the last few years with people like Terrell, John Moore, the Navy, even insurance companies that are saying, why are so many submarine Navy retired people moving to the Ozarks? We don't get it. That's what a insurance company told John Moore when he was briefing a group of people. When the odds start going beyond 10% and you're starting to put more bullets in that 10-chamber revolver, the odds go up. Do you want to play life and death with those kind of odds? That I'm not trying to scare you. I'm just trying to put it in perspective. And in my opinion, this looks like more than a 10% threat. And Terrell, are you back?
Yeah, I'm right here. The key is that you're working with the worst case scenario. You're preparing for the worst case scenario. You don't want to work on the minimum side when you're dealing with an extinction level event. So once you go to the Ozarks, you get your large survival group and you get in the cavern with water, you've prepared for the worst case scenario. If the worst case does not happen, you're safe. If the worst case does happen, you're safe.
Now here's a lot of people. Well, I'll have to quit my job. I might lose it if I don't come back and they're hard to find. Well, let me tell you something, folks. Although I don't really like the political environment of Arkansas, I ignored it. In fact, they don't even know I'm here, basically. But the point is, economically, there are three states that are halfway decent. Believe it or not, Arkansas is one of them, and I don't even want to tell you why, because you'd puke. And the, you know, because of all the leftover stuff from the old days of Clinton and the drug dealing. But the point is that now there's legitimate businesses that are really carrying this
Ozark region of the Ozarks, in Arkansas, I mean. So, it's not like if you had to leave and you didn't have, you couldn't find work. You can find work here. In fact, you probably find more than you can handle. Now, the point that I'm getting at is, folks, make a serious consideration to what Terrell's telling you. Terrell, why don't you, I'm going to tell the audience, we're going to have links to a lot of things that you have, Terrell, but why don't we go ahead and when we're done with the broadcast today, Terrell, I'll have you get us some links, and we'll put it up on our broadcast for today's broadcast. Folks, is there any more questions that you want? And, Terrell, is there anything else, while they're thinking of a question, is there anything else you'd like to kind of summarize or give us at the end? And we've got one more question here. It said, did God give you any specific insight, vision, guidance concerning the upcoming catastrophe? If so, would you mind detailing it?
The star that's coming has come before. It's the star of the Son of Man that's coming. The day of the Lord is about to start. And the prophets didn't see it. So there's nothing in Scripture even about it other than that the day of the Lord comes as a thief in the night. This thing comes on cycles with the Son of Man upon the incarnations. When the Son of Man comes, say that's Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve are the olive trees of Zechariah 4, 11 through 14. And he's the prophet of Acts 3, 22 through 23. And he's going to come and warn everybody in the whole world. And some are going to believe and some aren't going to believe. And the ones that do believe and heed are going to have an opportunity to survive. And those that laugh and mock and scoff are going to perish. Okay. And, okay, that's it.
Terrell, what do you see with regard to tidal waves for coastal cities? That could be even a worse situation. If we're getting this kind of tectonic plate movement, coastal cities are going to be in big trouble.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he covered that. Yep. Go ahead.
90% of the population of the world lives along the oceans, in the coast, and along the waters. Mm-hmm. And they need to be away from the waters 250 miles, and in some cases, 1,000 miles. You know, if you live in California, right. You need to head for the hill, baby. I mean,
right.
The mountains into the Ozarks. Terrapins are coming.
But the Ozarks.
The other thing to remember is that I'm giving you the worst-case scenario. You need to keep that in mind. The worst-case scenario. Hopefully the worst-case scenario does not happen. But you have to realize when this thing can shift Earth axis 3 inches from over 6 AU away, okay, from over 400 million miles away, then whenever it's right next to the Earth, you have to expect bad things are going to happen, and you need to make adjustments in your contingency plans. So you have to plan for the worst. And that's what I'm trying to do, is help people plan for the worst. If it ends up being not as bad as I think, that's great. Then it's all good. But we're still on this side of the extinction level event, and we have time to prepare. So I believe everybody that's hearing these words, they should take heed of the warnings and prepare to the best of your ability. This is vacation time. Go on an extended camping trip. Go to a place that is a safe zone in the United States that happens to be in the Ozarks, and join yourself with a large survival group and do everything possible. If it turns out that this thing is just a comet, which I don't believe, then we went on an extended camping trip and we did everything we could to survive. And we shake hands and go home. But if the worst does happen, then we have a chance. And so that's basically that's the heart and core of my message right there.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about the likelihoods here. How likely is it that there's something there, percentage-wise? And I'll just have you do real quick 80% chance, 100, whatever you think.
Oh, there's 100% chance. 100%.
That there's something there. Now, folks, that doesn't mean what it's going to do yet. I just ask if there was something there. There is something there. Now, everybody in our chat room ought to understand, and they're listening to this broadcast. Folks, there's something out there. Now, he said he's given this threat assessment to the worst likely scenario. What's the odds of it getting to the worst likely scenario percentage-wise?
Ooh, that's a difficult question. See, I hate to water that down when I'm preparing you for the worst case.
Right.
I would like to say 100%. I would like to say 100%, but let's say 75%.
Okay, let me ask you, folks. We're going to get that revolver back out. And an event that could kill you, with the odds of it being 7 bullets in this chamber, I can't get a half of one in there, but 7 bullets in a 10-chamber gun, spin the chamber and pull the trigger at your head. Now, that means, folks, get ready. what's the likelihood of something? Okay, that means, well, I just answered the question. 25% chance of less happening. Terrell, what's the likelihood of this object doing absolutely nothing to this planet? What's your thought there, percentage?
Zero. The reason is because when you back the JPL up, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, you get the alignments on 311 of this year, the Earth axis shift. You go back to last year, 227. 2010, the Chile quake, the axis shift, aquifers around the world shifting. See, that information tells you that this alignment, I wish Jupiter was in alignment or Saturn or somebody, but it's not. I've looked everywhere. The only common denominator is this Allenin deal. Mr. Amrabasic in that April 11th paper of this year tracks it back to 1965, giving us large events. And so whenever when you run the JPL in the future in this timeline, the chances of something not happening when it's happened continuously at every alignment, you say that that number has to be zero. There's something that's going to happen. It's just a matter of how bad is it going to be.
Okay. I happen to agree with that. I think there's probably a 90-plus percent chance there's actually something there. And with what I'm beginning to see recently and who's been calling me with information, I'd probably be an idiot not to, to think there's anything that there's – I'd be an idiot not to think something's there. Second, something is going to happen, and none of it is good. Now, how bad it gets is something you're going to have to figure out for yourself. But if there's 10% chance, folks, of you having a life-threatening event occur, then you would be foolish not to make some kind of preparation so that you don't put a gun with one bullet of 10 chambers to your head and pull the trigger. If you don't do something with at least a 10% likelihood, nobody, including me, knows what's going to happen. Nobody. It might be your belief. You may not want it. You may think there's nothing. But remember, we try to fool ourselves, don't we? Terrell, we have tons of people out there that just, you know, don't want to look at the picture because they're scared. Well, don't be afraid to. That's going to get you in more trouble. Folks, right. it's been a pleasure to have you, Terrell. You're welcome to stay. We're going to be a little bit off topic here, but we're going to take another break, and then I'd like for Eli to kind of give us a little bit of his stuff that he came on for today. And gosh, guys, we'll get Terrell to give us some more links, more information. And Terrell, I'm going to be talking to you after the broadcast, if that's okay.
Okay, I'm being called to supper, actually. So
okay.
I'll go do that, and you guys have your show. Would you like to get a hold of me later?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay.
After the show, it'll probably be a little while, and then I'll eat myself, and then I'll give you a good
okay.
hold of you.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me.
Okay.
Okay, Terrell. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, let's take a quick break, folks, and we're going to listen to Space Blings, and then we'll have Eli come right back. We'll be right back.
Tarkus Oog Radio.
Welcome to the Waterman Files. We're going to continue a little bit here. And today is July the 29th. And by the way, I didn't mention it because it was such a good interview, but by the way, we do have a special, you know, we do have a food package, and you might as well get it from us. And just go to the Waterman Files, click on the, you know, shop food tab, and you'll see, or just go to my website, thewatermanfiles.com, about three or four of the articles down, you'll see exactly what's in this four-person, one-year package. And it's probably 25% of what it usually costs. I mean, it's like 75% off. Okay, just wanted to let you know that's available if you're interested in it. It's only going to be there as long as the stuff lasts. I don't know how long it's going to last. It's going out the door. Well,
it's
anyway.
It's going to last until September.
Well, hopefully right. the special's still there. Yeah. You know, I hope it lasts another week. I don't know. It's going out the door. You know, there was some comment, Eli, about this, and we're going to switch gears here in a minute. There was some comment. Somebody, there is a new crop circle, this alien with a pipe-smoking alien. Now, you've got to see the humor in it, but you see mm-hmm. it. I forgot to ask Terrell. I'm going to let you all know, but I'm going to ask him if he's got any information regarding this event through some crop circles, you know, and I forgot to ask. Okay. But there is a very interesting one with an alien with a pipe that's it looks like smoking pipe. I have no clue what it is. I've been looking at these, and, of course, that's what the government was trying to get me in for, was this kind of interpretation, because I have, you know, translated some of the hieroglyphic stuff off some of this debris. Now, I haven't ever told that to anybody, but I don't care anymore. It's incredible that, you know, we're at this time in our history of the planet. I don't really give a rip anymore what anybody knows. And whether I'm supposed to say it or not. Mm-hmm. The point is we really do need to be preparing, because it's not just Terrell's information that's pointing to some really nasty events ahead. And of course, I'm going to be having Eli come on at the end of the shows, because we've had some nefarious individuals causing a lot of revolutionary issues, and they get started all kinds of ways. I mean, they might be as blatant as actually financing some people to get sent to Russia that starts a revolution. Now, that doesn't mean these people are wealthy that do it. That means the wealthy people had some other people do it for them. So what you got for us today?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just follow up real quickly on the Elanin story. This is an article entitled "Bad News from NASA: Proof mm-hmm. that Comet Elanin is Affecting the Earth," and the article is by Dr. Mark Sirkus, S-I-R-C-U-S, and he's quoting here from the NASA. Well, he's saying here, "I found out that a large celestial body has already penetrated the solar system and is on course for a near and possibly horrific encounter with the Earth in the fall of 2011." So this is from NASA, and he's got a link here. It says he's looking at the NASA website. NASA mathematical model of Comet Elanin. I found out that this that this body is for real. However, NASA is downplaying it, saying it's just a small comet, and that you know, there's really not a whole lot to worry about. Okay, but as Terrell was saying, it correlates with these tectonic plate movements we've had the last couple of years.
And so the issue is, the issue shouldn't anymore be, is there something coming?
Yeah.
It is. Everybody, even like you say, NASA is saying something is coming, mm-hmm. but it's about yeah. exactly what yeah. is coming. Well, I don't trust NASA. We don't trust NASA. But, you know, folks, occasionally through even a very, very controlled environment, which NASA is, stuff mm-hmm. slips out. Stuff does slip out.
Right.
And people like myself that have worked on projects from them have figured mm-hmm. out stuff, even though it's really compartmentalized. And you go, aha, this is what they're trying to really figure out. And so you might whistleblow it and talk about, you know, just like I did with Stardust Project, just exactly what they expected to have happen to the sun and get it all heated up. And it doesn't need just a comet or a brown dwarf, Eli, to warm it up. I mean, we're talking about other things can cause the heating up of the sun, too. So, but go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. And the fact is that they built a huge underground complex underneath the Denver airport. And nobody really knows how big it is, but it's supposed to be multi-levels. And the federal government has created these underground sanctuaries all over the country. And they haven't made these things public, so they don't intend to let the average citizen to be safe as well as they are, right? So the government knows something's up, but they're not telling us, okay? So anybody who trusts the government is living in a fictitious world, okay? The government is not your friend.
You bet. Now, this crop circle has this alien smoking, and, you know, they've got all kinds of questions in the chat room about, okay, does the five puffs or things of smoke coming from the pipe mean fifth dimension? It could be a lot more simple than that. Actually, folks, if you were trying to get a message, you would make it as simple as possible.
Right.
Maybe aliens are the smoking gun.
Uh-huh.
Period.
Right.
The smoke, they're here. They're the smoking gun. You know, they're the evidence. And so, hey, where are they at? Well, maybe we need to review the Federal Reserve issue, right? I mean, it's a mess.
Right. It could also be the fifth world. I think that's the Mayan interpretation of what's coming, the Mayan end date. And their prediction is for December 21st, 2012, although there are others who have interpreted that the effects of it will begin in 2011, and sounds like that's going to be true, too. So this would be the fifth world, and four have already been destroyed, so that could be what the five puffs are all about. Okay.
Well, it's interesting, too, that you know we're talking about this schedule, this timeline, and so forth, and we're talking about, you know, August 1 being a bug-out date, August, the first week of August. It's real interesting that we're talking about a bailout issue in America.
Right.
And I just heard today, let me just read to you a quote, because I got this when I was watching. I don't do it all the time, but I thought I'd go venture and see. There was somebody that was talking today on CNBC, that anchor on a program called Street Signs, and he said, "Sell all your investments." This was the anchor. He says, "Sell all your investments and stock up on beans." That's what he said today. He says, "I've had it with." This guy said, "I've had it with politicians. I don't even want them on my program anymore." He was angry. He said, "I don't even want to hear from them. I don't like the Democrats. I don't like the Republicans. And I don't want any more." He said, "Just sell all your investments and stock up on beans." And he said, and then they were talking about Europe actually might be in more trouble than Greece because of the U.S. debt.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of thinking, you know, this is like a revolution. I wonder if they're going to quietly sell China our assets in order to monetize the debt. You know, maybe they'll sell the Grand Canyon. Maybe they can sell them the Yellowstone Caldera, you know, and we can pay our Social Security. But there's $23 billion in Social Security checks going out to millions of people, and it's got to be due August the 3rd. And look what we're facing here in the time frame. The reason why Terrell popped up on my radar screen was the time frame he was talking about. It's incredible timing.
Okay. Well,
go ahead.
As I understand the Elinan scenario, it'd be early September when we might have another event. I don't know anything about August, and then.
Well, it's just to get ready. He was talking about getting that the first event.
Yeah, we got
event,
a month to get.
Yeah.
We have about a month to get ready. Yeah, and that in late September and middle of November is when we have more alignments happening. And as he said, he's planning for the worst-case scenario. NASA is saying it's just another comet, don't worry. But, you know, we know that NASA never tells the truth because they're a government agency, right? So, but nevertheless, their people, as you mentioned, these ex-military people, are all relocating to Arkansas for just the same reasons that Terrell is warning us about. Right, right. Now, as far as the economy is concerned, if this is all getting ready to happen and the international bankers know that it's getting ready to happen, then they don't really aren't concerned about the value of the Federal Reserve note, otherwise known as the U.S. dollar. They'll just continue hyperinflating it until doomsday, right? Because
there's
really nothing. Yeah.
Nothing to worry about, right?
Yeah, there's nothing they can do about it, so let's keep printing money, let's keep financing our wars, let's keep buying off politicians and getting rid of those politicians that don't agree with us, such as those in Norway.
Wow.
Right?
Yes.
Okay? They have all kinds of money. All they have to do is print money to buy an assassin. And that's what they did in Norway.
You know what? I think their little mechanism, their little machinery, the cogs in the wheel, us, you and me, that they think they've got. I mean, you know, they've got these mainstream media people like on CNBC, which is a financial network of called Street Talk was one of the programs. I mean, usually these guys are touting the party line. In other words, they're telling exactly what they're supposed to. This guy just lost it in the middle of the show and just threw everything to the side. And it was like all of a sudden he just couldn't bottle it up anymore. And he just released, you know, hey, I'm fed up with it. You know, it was unscripted. Yeah. I was just sitting there.
Yeah.
And I don't watch it that much. I'm going, I was in shock.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going, whoops.
I'm tired of reading from the international banker's script, and I'm just going to cut loose and tell the truth. Right?
Well, you could tell it wasn't scripted at all. It wasn't at all.
Right.
In fact, it was probably I'm sure, you know, I'd be interested in seeing if he's even there on the show tomorrow. You know,
Must have been like that movie where a talk show host just went nuts and started spilling the beans about the conspiracy, right? The media is controlled by the conspiracy. Everything's controlled by the conspiracy that you don't believe in, but the conspiracy doesn't want you to believe in, right?
Right.
And, you know, if there were no conspiracy, why doesn't a single person, a single journalist talk about the illegitimacy of the Federal Reserve Bank? And how it was created. And all that funny money they're printing is going to finance international war without consulting Congress. You know, why don't any of these network people talk about this stuff?
Well, there's
a conspiracy.
That's right. There's a lot of alternative news out. Just recently, yesterday or the day before, News with Views, which is newswithviews.com, by the way, there's an article called The Smoking Gun. I was thinking of that when that alien smoking the pipe came up on that crop circle. But that was the title. The subtitle is Preparation for War on the People. And it says here, let me just read you the first sentence. The establishment has taken over, looted our republic and our people into bankruptcy, effectively denying us of our rights, while preparing to make war on we the people for total Marxist one world order governance. And that's the start of this article. And he's got lots and lots of evidence. I mean, he just goes into extreme amounts of documentation about what they're getting ready to do. And so this is like a coup. Right. And I'm saying, folks, if you read my last article on the Waterman Files, I think it's pretty telling about. By the way, Eli, I put on my website. Remember how they were trying to get the audit of the Fed pushed through, and they only got a kind of a partial audit. They've gotten something done they've never been able to do to the disgruntled, anger of the Fed. Even though it's not what really you could call a full audit. They still reluctantly did it, which revealed that trillions went to people outside of the country that the Fed's there for in the first place. Well, I've got that, folks, on my website. I've got the whole report.
Yeah.
The document from the Fed is right there, posted right there at the Waterman Files. You
right.
can download the actual audit itself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an accountant, so I just have to, you know, kind of understand part of it. What's your thoughts, Eli, about these nefarious kind of agendas that are going on? Have you got some information for us?
Yeah, this has been going on for the last 100 years. The Federal Reserve Bank is nothing more than a branch of Rothschild Incorporated. Rothschild Incorporated is the eighth beast, Mystery Babylon of the Book of Revelation. It's the most evil empire that has ever existed.
Before you go any further, is there supposed to be a ninth beast?
No.
Is this like, okay.
This is the last beast before the judgment day.
So we're talking about end time stuff here too.
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely. Yeah, and Revelation chapter 20 talks about that after 1,000 years, this beast would be set free and it would deceive the nations for a little season. Well, the House of Rothschild came into power in the year 1815, supplanting the Kingdom of Napoleon, which was the shortest, least long-lasting of the all eight beasts, according to the Book of Revelation. So that came true. That was the least long-lived of all the beasts. And then right after Napoleon, 1815, the Congress of Vienna was the first attempt by the Rothschilds, we're talking about international Jewish banksters, to create a one-world government. And they have been endeavoring to create a one-world government ever since. Okay, League of Nations was a major attempt after Congress of Vienna. They had several in between there. And then finally, the United Nations organization, okay? They finally succeeded in doing that. The United Nations has nothing to do with nations. That's just a false name. It's corporations. The United Nations is a bunch of corporations trying to dictate terms to two nations, all right? It's a corporate enterprise. Has nothing to do with nations. They handpick the representatives. When was the last time you heard about an election here in the United States to select the representatives from the USA to the United Nations?
Yeah.
Are they picked by the American people?
Oh, yeah, of course. We've got all kinds of,
yeah.
I'm being sarcastic.
You're right. When was the last time that happened? It never happened. Those people are selected, handpicked by the bankers. And that's your UN representative, okay? And
really?
Typically, they're international Zionist Jew, like Madeleine Albright, okay? She suddenly discovered or remembered that she was Jewish after she became the ambassador there. But getting back to Norway, because Norway has offended the state of Israel, and that's why this assassination spree, this genocidal act took place. I'm going to be quoting here from the publication of the Council of Conservative Citizens. I think Sam Francis was one of the founders, but it's primarily represented in the South, but it's a political group, the Council of Conservative Citizens, and the title is Norwegian Spree Killer Was a Moderate, Media Using Fake Facebook Profile. Because I think everybody's heard that Anders Breivik is supposedly a neo-Nazi or some kind of right-winger. Well, he absolutely is not, okay?
Oh, that's the guy that shot everybody up, right?
Right, yeah, 90 people, and then set off a bomb, right, in Oslo, okay? The article states, the suspect identifies himself as an anti-racist, pro-homosexual, pro-Israeli, and attacked Vlaams Belang and the English Defense League on a document on a website that appears to represent a Norwegian version of the American neocons.
Okay? Oh, wow. Which is Zionist agenda.
That's right. That's Zionism. Okay? He's pro-Israeli. He's anti-Islam. He's anti-racist. And he's pro-homosexual. That sounds Jewish to me. Okay? All right? He's in lockstep with Zionism. Total lockstep with Zionism, okay?
Wow.
So any representations that the media makes that he is a right-winger, neo-Nazi, homegrown terrorist in Norway is a lot of bunk. He is working for the Mossad.
Well, the Mossad, and, I would be surprised. You know, that there's, yeah. there's a lot of evidence coming out. Mossad was very involved, of course.
Right, right.
With our attack 911. So.
And he's also, and Anders Breivik is also affiliated with MI5, which is British secret intelligence. Okay.
Kind of makes you wonder what's going to happen to somebody like this. You know, even if it's some kind of a nefarious plan. I mean, it's like, are you willing to sacrifice your life to go out and do this work?
Right,
you know, I mean,
right.
like, want to throw away their life to do this.
Right.
I have
right.
no clue.
Well,
I don't
yeah, well, he's probably a Manchurian candidate. He's probably been brainwashed. He's probably been deprived of homosexual sex for 3 years, right? And said, oh, well, if you do this for us, you'll have all the lovers you want, right? They program these people. They program these people. And through sensory deprivation and other things. And just like the guy who killed John Lennon, you know, they have a switch. They turn on a switch, and he pulls a trigger. That's how they can brainwash. Yeah, they can do this to people. Now, continuing with the article here, as soon as the killer's name was released, thousands of people began looking up his Facebook page. It is common for people to make hoax pages when someone is in the news. Initially, a page in Norwegian appeared bearing the suspect's name, multiple face shots, and a photo of the suspect in uniform of a European Freemason. Then Facebook deleted it.
Uh-oh.
Okay. So they deleted his picture as a Freemason, right?
You know, what's interesting to me, Eli, is what are people so afraid of when they get rid of information? You know,
yeah.
If it's wrong, it's wrong. Just let them have it. Right. If it's right, it's right. You know, whenever you see stuff like that disappear, it almost makes you think it's got to be a smoking gun, like we've been talking
that's
about.
That's right. Today. That's right. Well, so here he's a Freemason. Okay. Mm-hmm. He's anti-racist. He's pro-homosexual. He's pro-Israeli. And he's anti-Muslim. That does not fit your neo-Nazi, homegrown terrorist profile. That fits your Mossad profile. Okay.
Wow. And so what's up? Profile. So what do you think's up here? What do you think this was all done for?
Okay, the photographs from the island, I forget the name of the island, Utopia or something like that. Utopia, I can't remember right now. From the day before, I saw photographs of the people, which is, it's kind of a political rally park, you know, that they get together at and, you know, have fun. And they were holding up boycott Israel signs.
Oh, in Norway, yes.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Before this shoot up happened. Okay. Now, if this guy was really a right winger, he would love these people, not kill them. Right? Okay. And this stuff makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. You know, and typically, this is Jews news. It's total garbage. That's being put out by the internet. Well, look what's happening to Rupert Murdoch, right? He's been discovered manipulating news. Can you believe it?
Oh, big surprise.
International Zionist manipulating the news? Bribing people? And paying
big surprise.
Yeah.
And now he's getting caught snooping on you, too.
That's right. That's right.
You know,
okay? So this is what mainstream media is all about. It's about mind control. That's what it's about. Okay? You can't
well,
get any real news.
Oh, I tell you, this mind control, this mind control thing is extremely real. Extremely real.
That's right. That's right.
From my training with Frank, we're talking about deep assets that will be sitting there for 15-20 years. It's just incredible to me that they can be placed, and they look like anybody else. They might actually even have a career.
Yeah.
And then they just go off. You know, they go do their, it's incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Continuing with this article, they state, several things have been doctored up to alter the suspect's political views. First, a section titled Philosophy has been added to include Christian and conservative. Now, do you remember what happened with Jared Lee Loeffner? You know, they said he was a conservative, neo-Nazi, right-winger, blah, blah, blah. Well, it turned out he was Jewish, and that his parents went to the same synagogue as the victim.
So we're really what we're really talking about is a foreign agency, probably the Mossad from Israel, in an operation here, and it was they picked out what was the end? Was this? I mean, if they were protesting and they attack them, it's not going to stop them from protesting. I mean, you know, there'll be other people pick up the signs. Why would they even want to try to kill off people that are protesting? I mean, of course, they wouldn't want them to know it's anti-Zionist. I mean, it's not it's the Zionist hit team coming out to get the agenda protesters.
Well, the politicians in Norway absolutely do know that's who it is. Okay, and they got the message. The people who needed to get the message got the message, and the Mossad doesn't care what the public thinks, because they have the green light to assassinate anybody they please. They know they can get away with assassination worldwide. They do it all the time. And, you know, there's nobody who's going to stop them. What politician in his right mind would go up publicly and say, ah, well, the Mossad did it? Well, he'd be the next one to die. Okay?
Right.
Okay? So they know. The mob, the mafia, the international banksters know that, you know, they're ruling this world via terror, because they can assassinate anybody they please, and there's not a journalist or a politician on the planet who would dare say a word about this. Okay? That's fortunately we have the internet, so that average schmucks like you and me can talk about it. And if they kill one of us, then they'd be extremely suspicious, right?
Yes.
So they're starting to walk a fine line, because my impression is that more and more people are waking up to the fact that the Israeli state is nothing but a big terrorist organization.
And well, they have their own apartheid going on, and you know a lot of people think it's a country for the Jews
it's
to be
Jews
free.
Only, right.
But they have they do apartheid, and if you're the wrong kind of ethnic Jew, you don't get to live in that country where you want. They tell you where to live, and you think South Africa had a problem? Israel's even worse.
Right. I mean, it's absolutely an apartheid state.
Actually, they're not. Israel is a country has done so many crimes that probably. Yeah. You know, it's referred to as a state, and folks, in my opinion, it's not behaving worth having. You know?
Right.
You know, but I don't know what to say. There's a lot we can do. By the way, folks, there's been some questions, Eli, about that document, that audit. Mm-hmm. On my website, on my last post, is a document from the Fed. You can download it. I don't know where the government link was right off the bat. I can't find it right now. I'm on the air, but I'll put it back on my website, and you can download that document right from my website. And if you do, you might see actually where the link in the document's probably a link location where it's located. It's a government site, by the way. So it's there. I got two things in there that are downloaded. One of them, there's two downloadable in my last post. You've probably never seen it before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Me doing those kind of links, but they're both downloadable PDF documents. Go ahead.
Posted this article I'm quoting from into, I'm not sure if this is the chat room, but you have access to it right there if you want to share that with people.
Yeah,
okay?
I put it in the chat room.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Now, let me just a couple more quotes from here. First, they removed they added a philosophy section in which he supposedly now claims to be a Christian and a conservative. Okay, and then they say that a previous section under the Norwegian term Anet is gone. In this former section, the suspect identifies his heroes as Winston Churchill and Max Manus, the leader of the Norwegian anti-Nazi resistance. Someone in Norway picking these two men as his heroes would indicate that he is a moderate or center, how about left winger, right? More the middle of the political spectrum than the fringes. So the attempt by the media to portray Anders Breivik as a right-winger is just absolutely fraudulent. Okay? White supremacist, neo-Nazi are the terms that the media is throwing around. Okay?
We're just talking about massaged information. These people do it all the time. Yeah. I mean, I'm a nobody, Eli. I'm a nobody that ended up on Nightline, and they massaged the information. You know, it's
you just coined a new term, massaged, M-O-S-S-A-D-G-E-D, massaged information. Right?
Massage that information. There we go.
Right. and so it's ludicrous. The guy is a pro-Zionist all the way.
Interesting.
Everybody who knows him knows that about him, but you know the media must create a new identity for him, so that he fits the profile of a white supremacist, neo-Nazi, right winger, you name it, right?
Right.
And this is how they manipulate us.
Nefarious individuals of the wrong revolution. Gosh, thanks, Eli, for the information. Of course, here we go. We have another lie being thrown in our face about who this person really is.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure having you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Very good. Well, I just wanted to say it just doesn't make any sense for a right-winger to shoot up a pro-Norwegian political party rally. That doesn't make any sense. Only an enemy.
That's right. Yeah. Well, we'll have you back on for another nefarious individual profile. This is going to be, we'll to keep this up, folks.
Yeah.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for being on, Eli, and joining us. And make sure you cover that other stuff you might need to get caught up on and see what's going on.
Right.
Thanks, Eli. And thank you all for listening. And for joining us again, of course, Eli. It's been my pleasure. You've been listening to the Waterman Files, and we'll get some more information to you as soon as possible, and kind of keep up with it there on the website. And I noticed that my email link to subscribe isn't functioning, so I'm going to go in there to the subscription on emails and fix that. But in the meantime, you could also do an RSS feed and get my post. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Hans, for helping hang on there for another half hour or so. Good night, everybody.
Even though I can't explain, more than a dream that you are reaching, more than a life that shadows all the pain. A special meaning in the thorn of dreams, in the garden where a thought can blind me. 'Cause I am lost here, where it never gleams, where I found that I scream so blindly. Until I rise up.
This is Argos Radio.